Hello, and welcome to the Covenant of Mayors podcast. I'm Anthony Coakley, and today we've scheduled a reunion of sorts. Two cities that hosted each other to learn more about adaptation to climate change through the Covenant of Mayors twinning program. Miriam from PAC and Christina from Braga are joining us together on the airwaves to discuss the challenges that each city faces, some bright ideas, and the value of collaboration. Christina Costa represents Braga's Division of Environment, Climate Change and Animal Policy, and Miriam is Carbon Neutrality Project Manager at Pau Bern Pyrenees.
Christina?
Hiya.
Hey.
Good morning, Christina.
How are you doing?
I'm okay, you?
You're fine. I'm on holiday tonight, Christina.
All right, good.
Yeah. Looking forward, actually. Okay, you'll have to wait a little bit longer.
Miriam, could you tell me what was most interesting about Braga from the perspective of PAU?
Well, I remember what I think we discussed still with Christina is the way they use their river to involve citizens in taking care of the river, taking care of the side banks as well. And that they, Christina will correct me, but they sell in bracket, making the sign in bracket, part of the river to citizens or schools and ask them to take care of the piece of the riverside they have in charge. And I think this was very interesting to see that it's a way actually to really involve people and make sure that they care because this, they own in some way part of the river. So this is what I remember, and I thought we have to find a way here in Pau to do something like that. Maybe not along the side our river, but maybe in other part of the cities to basically, yes, involve people to make sure that we hand you over the responsibility to take care of this area. And I thought that was an interesting way of involving citizens.
So the river project is a project which includes to motivate people to adopt, selling this adoption. So the idea is to find at least four people which are interested in that 500 meters of the river, usually small rivers, because we need to go to both sides of the river. So it is a big one, we need to have a bridge or a boat, which is not very practical. So usually it's a small river. And if we control all the small rivers, we are controlling the big ones because all the water is going to the big one. Yeah. So at least four people. So it includes like families, group of friends, enterprises, schools. So most of them are schools because it has a very good effect on students and it can share, it can evolve hundreds of students at the same time. So what is the commitment? The commitment is someone gives, in this case, because most of the, for them, it was the municipality giving, a kit of different stuff, like to measure the distance, like to find out how deep is the river and how wide is the river. And at the same time, there are papers showing the most common plants, the most common mammals, most common reptiles, all the animals and plants around, which at least the most common ones. We have so subjects and material like that to make it easy and take that in a backpack and go to the river and do work to monitorize the quality of the water, so the flow of water, the biodiversity around, and if it changed or not, because they should go at least twice a year. So usually it is in spring and in autumn. So because in summer, some of the rivers almost disappear, and during winter, sometimes it's dangerous and it's very wet. So nobody's comfortable going to the river, because usually it is muddy and rainy. So at least twice a year, they go to monitorize these subjects on the river in that 500 meters. And They need to fill the platform all the information, and once a year at least they need to do something to make the river better. So it can be to clean the river, like to take plastic and other stuff, or they can plant the riparian galleries.
Great. And Christina, was there anything you saw in Pau that really tickled your fancy?
Yes, both of us, me and Paul, which was the other member which went with me, we learned the experience. It was very, very nice. It was our first time in Pau, so I didn't know at all the city. And it was very interesting to see the project they show us. So the urban vegetable gardens, it was very, very interesting. So we are trying to find out how to do that. First of all, we need to know who are the owners, because we have lands around which nobody is taking care of. So no agriculture, no forest. And most of them are full of invasive plants already. And we want to find out who are the owners to convince them to control. Otherwise, we are trying to control the invasive plants in other areas. And if they don't do it, it doesn't work anymore, because they will start keep coming from that ones, from that land, which nobody is taking care of. So we want to know who are the owners, to try or to make it easy to rent or to buy, because we have young people, young agricultors, which are interested, very interested in starting activities, but they don't have the land. So they are looking for land. They are looking for land to buy or to rent. But because the owners are very close, they don't want to rent. They don't want to land, to sell or to rent. So they are keeping it as it is. Nobody is taking care. And we could have a lot of food, but we don't, because nobody is taking care of the land.
So, Miriam, I believe that your Centure Verte has is supposed to be a good practice in this domain.
So La Ceinture Verte, or Green Belt, if we wanted to translate it word for word. Actually, it's a national initiative who has for objective and aims to encourage the settlement of green vegetable gardeners producing vegetables. So we created locally what we call a cooperative, une SIC cooperative. So that brings together different stakeholders who put money all together to support the installation of those green vegetable gardeners. So basically what the cooperative does is it buys the land, it do the investment in what's required to do these activities, like, for example, that they provide a house, a small house where you can store all the tools you need to do the gardening. It's also a land where the water system is available. So basically, the cooperative does all the investment, and it looks also for the land, which is also not sometimes easy for people who want to do these activities to find. So they find the land, they prepare everything, they do the investment, and then they basically rent out those places to people who want to garden vegetables and do an economy out of it. And it's not just small ones, it's you, it's an economy. So that's behind. And the rent is adapted also to the incomes they produce also. And it's very important actually to ease that. It's a way of easing the process of installing people who want to produce vegetables. Do you want to know more about it, or is it okay?
It's never one thing with adaptation and with mitigation as well. So this idea of the gardens has got so many elements that it improves locally. There's social, there's economic, there's health also, and environmental at all.
And it's
Yeah, go ahead.
So it's a cooperation, because the different stakeholders, they're very different, various stakeholders who put their money into this cooperative first. So we also have, we call the Chambre d'Agriculture, which also play an important role. The city put money in and another structure. So we get together, that's one thing. And also, we mentioned all those issues, but it's also important for us to support here the agriculture economy. There's going to be issue also with a lot of agriculture that are going to retire in the few years ahead. So what's going to those land become? We want to try as much as possible that they stay as agriculture, you know, and it's important also to work on the resilience of the territory in terms of food. So that's why we're very much interested in agriculture, and that's why we share with Paolo and Cristina those the Ceinture Verte and also another we call it Parkway, another place where we help also the training of those all those future green gardeners, so green vegetable gardeners. So we try actually each time to do a coalition, and to find places where people can do things, experiment things. And so in the Ceinture Verte, currently we have 6 vegetable gardeners that are installed. We're looking for 2 more. And it's good, quite interesting also way of collaborating and doing things.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I can see why that might have been something relevant for Cristina. Is there any other memory that shines through for either of you from the visits?
I remember Cristina and Paolo smiles actually throughout the 2.5 days. It was a pleasure to have them over and to make them meet the different colleagues and thanks to Cristina to speak French so well, so she could also translate to some things to Paolo. But no, I think we were very pleased to have them over and just to show them around a little bit what we do in Pau. So it's great souvenir of having them. That's what I remember. The how easy it's also it was to discuss things and we Cristina, the little cookies you brought over for us, they were just gone in 1 day after you left. So we shared them with the colleagues.
Great to know. So I can send you the recipe if you want.
Yes, you can.
But
you
also send biscuits.
Yeah, but you see this, Anthony, this is what you discussed why earlier we applied, and this is exactly, well, we have a connection somewhere where this maybe we'll meet again in the future, and there's a link that's been done, and it's nice to hear Cristina again today. And we're very busy on each side of the Pyrenees Mountains in Braga, Cristina in Braga and me in Pau, but I know that if we meet again or if we cross in other meetings or we'll connect. This is nice. This is also what it's all about. I've been involved in European program throughout my professional career, and I know how useful and it can be to exchange with other cities on various different subjects. So when I saw the opportunity proposed by the Covenant of Mayor to be matched with another city to discuss about adaptation, I took on the opportunity to do this, and I know how useful it can be to share a return of experience, or also to meet people, to see how it's done differently somewhere else. And sometimes good to have different point of view to make ourselves progress and maybe give us new ideas to go further. So this is what mainly motivated me to apply, and also because the subject was about adaptation to climate change. So these are the both reasons why I thought it was interesting.
And in your previous experience then with peer learning and knowledge exchange, was it also on climate adaptation, or was it around other subjects?
Completely different other subjects. I had the opportunity to be involved in Marie Curie program with collaborative exchange. So I know with many different countries and universities on organic solar cells. And the other subject was about hydrogen buses also beforehand, where we also, the city was involved in two big projects dedicated to development of hydrogen fuel cells buses. So completely different subject. Doesn't matter actually what kind of subject you're working on. peer learning exchange program is always useful. And I will do it next time if I have another subject to discuss and try to find out who else in Europe is concerned and want to talk about it. So doesn't matter the subject, always useful.
But out of interest, are you now growing solar cells in your garden and running hydrogen buses around?
No, but I'm actually very proud because now in Po we have those hydrogen buses running for now almost 4 years. And to see these buses running in the city each time I come in, that's yes, I have to say that I'm a little bit proud and happy each time I see them. So so it's nice and it's a good thing.
Christina, did you have a similar motivation for taking part in the Covenant of Mayors, the peer learning program?
Yeah, the bigger reason was to learn with others from the university, it was really starting the subject. So we need to share and to learn with others because probably they start earlier. We were really pressured in the subject, so we needed to learn. That's why we decided to try. In everyday life, we are, just dealing with our subjects and trying to keep updates with all the subjects we are dealing. And when that happens, or when we are receiving someone and we need to show something, sometimes we need to talk with other departments to check, okay, so what are you exactly doing here? Because I will have guests and I need to go there to show them. So I need to know more details. And then we need to stop other stuff and just dive in that subject. And then, yes, we go deeper on some subjects, which usually we go really superficial because we don't have time.
We are just at the very beginning of settling or determining adaptation to climate plan. This is something we didn't do in our previous climate action plan, something we need to tackle now. It's very important. So we are actually now identifying what are the vulnerabilities of our country or in Po, around Po, and this will be very useful because we're going to be building actually our second climate plan, action plan now in the next few months, and we want to make it adaptation, to make it a real, have a focus on this next to mitigation action, but really incorporate this in the new climate action plan. So this is actually why we in the beginning applied to the Covenant of Mayors to get a knowledge about how it's been done somewhere else. And like as you say in French, we say in veille, it's like a benchmark in some ways to see how other people are doing it. So it's actually quite a bit of beginning to for us. We did a few action in the current action climate action plan that is coming to an end, but we're going to give it more space and or more bigger importance to make sure we manage this aspect in the future.
In terms of adaptation, are you seeing effects of climate change locally that are worrying you, or you're predicting maybe effects that could be worrying that you really want to get ahead of?
There's actually two aspects of climate change that we are concerned about here in Po. It's the heat wave and floods. So we know that in the future we may have a higher number of days where it's the heat is important, but also heat waves. So longer days and nights where the temperature doesn't go down under 20 degrees. So this is one factor. We are an area where it rains a lot in France. And we know that maybe in the future we'll get a couple more days of heavy rains, and we have some sectors that may be impacted by floods, like we already had actually this June, but that happens really regularly. But we may have major events like this. So these are the two factors we need to adapt to. And we already have colleagues who are looking to urban heat island. I think this is the term in English. So the city of Po is there's a city center, and then there's also a lot of agricultural land around it. But the city center itself is concerned by urban heat islands. So these are the two aspects of climate change we're going to adapt to.
And when it comes to heat waves, I mean, over 20 degrees at night, it sounds quite pleasant. Why is this an issue that the city is concerned to act on? What are the fallout, for example, from heat waves?
Two aspects for me. There's health issue with especially elderly people. And we had some major issue in France back in 2003, for example, where we had a major heat wave and some many elderly people died, actually, about this. So it was a major factor in France. The other aspect also is, for me, linked to energy production in some ways also, where we're going to need maybe more cooling system, though you need more energy production. And this, we need also to see how much of an impact this may have. And my colleague who are in charge of developing sustainable energy, they're already trying to look into this and how they can bring cooling system or cooling energy towards this issue. So this is what I can think about right now. There's maybe others, but I need to check with my colleagues what I'm thinking about.
That's great. Yeah, I think the health thing is a really serious one. And about, in terms of flooding, is it something that Pau is really vulnerable to, that you've experienced, or it's something that you more predict to see as a future issue?
No, we do experience it already years after years. I think it's a matter of knowing if it's going to be more important, more often. So I have to admit, my house is flooded about 3 weeks ago. So it's something that I think we are used to, I would say, somehow, but we probably are going to have to manage more often. And this will be linked with one of the action we show Christina when she came over with Paolo. We went to a site where our colleagues in charge of the water did something a little bit to contain floods in one part of the city.
The restoration of the river, it was fascinating, a project which was very, very interesting. And we are not in the center town because, as I said, it is very, very narrow, so we don't have area for that. But we are trying to find a land after the town, after Braga, so going down the river, and to make a kind of park for citizens to walk. And then when it is very wet, so when after big rain, that can be flooded and it's not a problem, because we are trying to put just plants instead of having a lot of infrastructures. So we are trying to use the knowledge from the opportunity we had in Port to learn. Braga is the wettest city in the country. More rain than Braga just in the national park. So in the point of view of a urban place, is Braga the place where we have more rain. But in the last years, we have much less rain. So we are starting being worried about that, because even the oldest funicula in the world works in Braga, and it works with water. So the water is in the top of the mountain, and they have two chariots, so two kind of cars, and they are connected with a cable, and the one goes down with water and the weight of people going down, and the other one goes up. So if we don't have water anymore, that funicula will stop. So that is just a little bit of the subject, our worrying subject. But the highest one is the high temperatures. It was not common when I was a kid, we had 40 degrees. Here, now we have 40 degrees. And so for several days during the year. So floods, that happens. Usually in September, October, it starts raining, like in 20 minutes, then a flood. Because it rains like curtains of water, really, a lot of water at the same time. So, because we have a very narrow river crossing the center town, and because Braga is the old a Roman Empire town called Braca Augusta. So we have more than 2,000 years. So the town was building around the river. So the river is really narrow because the building and the roads were cutting, you know, the basin of the river. So it is very narrow, and when the water goes up very fast, and it goes very fast because all the roads, all the streets and pathways and houses, they are waterproof. So all the water goes to the river. So the level of the water goes up very fast. And then we have floods and wildfires because of high temperatures and the long forest we have around. We have eucalyptus trees and the pinus trees, which are not autochthonous trees. So they have they burn very, very easy. With very high temperatures, it's very easy to burn. So in 2017, we have a ring of fire around the town, and we felt like really in the oven. So it was after a very dry and warm year. And usually in the middle of September, the owners of land, of agriculture, of forest lands, they have the permission to burn the leftovers. But that year, because it was very warm and very dry, it was postponed 1 month. So in the middle of October, it was finally permitted to burn. And everybody started burning. So it started a fire coming from the other municipality near to us, so our neighbor. It came from Guimarães, so anyway, it arrived to Braga, and it was a ring around the city. So we are very worried about the fires, the forest fires. So we need to change as soon as possible the kind of forest we have. But the eucalyptus trees and the pinus trees, they grow up much faster than the oaks. And so Huertush is an oak, which is very adapted to our climate and our soil, but it takes 40 years to grow, at least. And the eucalyptus, after 20, is already adult tree. So it can be cutted for pulp, for paper pulp. So it's quite difficult to convince the owners. Even if during that 20 years, probably it will burn and they will disappear. But anyway, they think they want the forest for them, not for the grandchild. So it's difficult to convince them to change the kind of forest.
It sounds completely frightening. Were you there during this fire incident?
Yeah, okay. We thought it would be okay, not in danger, but the quality of the air was going down very fast with the smell and the smoke coming down to the valley, and we are in the valley, surrounded by little mountains, little hills. And some houses are in that area, so we were worried about that houses and that people. Fortunately, nothing happened to the people. So they were taking care of the houses first of all. So leaving the forest to burn because they didn't have firefighters enough for everything. And because it was other forest fires around, so we could not apply for other firefighters around from the other municipalities because they were fighting there as well, their own land. And so the people in the city were worried, and at the same time, some were fascinated from the fires. That is common. That is one of the problems in Portugal. The most of the fires are people responsibilities, not really natural. So people put fire because they like to see the fire. And that is a big stuff, a big difficulty to find that people to change their mentality.
We are hearing again here what we've heard from other cities and seen in the newspapers all year round. Extreme heat and floods reaching new heights thanks to climate change. But from river and forest management to sponge parks, cities are coming up with ways to grab double benefits, keeping people safe while invigorating communities with new projects and spaces to engage and create change, or just hang out on a sunny afternoon. In part two of this conversation, I'll take a back seat a bit and let Miriam and Christina swap some more stories about great ideas they got from each other's city. We'll also touch a bit more on flood and forest management, and then dive into the topic of engagement, both with city residents to involve them in local policy, and with colleagues within, breaking down the silos that can make it so hard for bureaucratic organizations to achieve the targets that they've set themselves. Let's dive into part two.
When we prepare the visits, we find out that we have actually three points in common. One was the river. Both cities are crossed by a major river, which has an importance in the city life. So we wanted to see what was the link with that, what we can learn from each other about that. There was the forest issues, where we both have to manage forests and owners and to make sure that we do the right thing with the forest. And the other thing was agriculture. So we wanted to discuss about that also. And so about the forest, we want to also we talked about floods just earlier. So we went to, we took them to a small river that it's not a river, it's a small one that crossed also the north of the city, and where you had two banks just like narrowed course. And it was nature was gone. So but this was not suitable anymore. So what our colleagues did, they put the river back in its natural way, and also work with the biodiversity colleagues to make it an area where nature can come back, and also small animals can come back. So they work together to manage flood at the same first, and also put back biodiversity. So we took Paolo and Christina there. They could exchange about how it was done, why it was done. In the afternoon, we also went to see, we have a big wood just next to Po. It's a green lung, an important green lung for citizens of Po, where they go to grunt, where they walk in the family. But this is a place where we discussed also with the forest management group how they actually manage the forest with climate change ahead, how they put new maybe tree species, how they manage the forest compared to this, so this was a way for us also to discuss about how we connect also to small owners, forest owners. We have different small pieces of land, and how important it is to connect to them, how we can involve them also in managing their forest better, to make sure that we, especially for Christina, it was important also to limit fire, forest fire. And if you don't know who is the owner of the forest, and you don't know who to contact to make sure that the forest is looked after properly. So we have the same issue here. We have lots of forest around Po, but there are small ones spread, or many different little owners. So when you want to work in a big area, you need to contact different people, and it's difficult then to do the work and to work on biodiversity, to make sure that the forest is nice. And it's also an issue with also the value chain and the economy around the forest here, where we can also improve maybe this, and also then provide wood for building or wood for eating. So this was a current issue we discussed also a lot. As far as I remember, so we took a lot, discussed about agriculture, because here we have a program, we have an agriculture strategy that we built with different stakeholders, but we also show them different two sites in the city where we actually encourage either the settlement of vegetable gardeners, so they can provide food to the area, or we also provide help for people that want to get trained to become vegetable gardeners. So we have two areas, and we show them these two areas, and also how we work with different stakeholders to make these two projects go forward and really have an impact on the territory. So these are the three things we saw, and of course lots of discussion and meeting with colleagues year round, because I'm not an expert in either adaptation, forest, biodiversity or agriculture. So my job was actually to contact everyone around here that could bring some information and knowledge to both Paolo and Cristina. And I did a little bit of translation as well, translation. But Cristina speaks very good French, and Paolo also a little bit, so that helped quite a lot.
And another project which was very interesting was that one about the production of meals for schools and homes for elderly people. So it was very interesting, but we are trying to start, as I said, with baby steps. So if we start having local food, that will be a very strong point. And then maybe we can start convincing enterprises to serve food with local ingredients.
I wonder if you could talk about how your own system of encouraging people to grow vegetables locally compares with that which you saw in Po.
Yeah, that will be fantastic if we could do that. But it's very difficult because they buy the food to an enterprise. So the enterprise produces the food, and usually they go with the food to the schools. We don't have old people houses like in Po, just food. And to schools, and we have more than 100 schools, from primary school, kindergarten, primary school to secondary schools. And they produce the food, they drop the food at the school, and they have no leftovers, I mean leftovers of the preparation of food, so the peeling the potatoes and all that stuff. So it's quite difficult to convince them. First of all, we don't have a lot of production, local production. We need to go far away to buy it. And Paul had the same problem with some ingredients. And but we have much more because around, in our municipality, there is almost no agriculture anymore, or they are just for cows. So they produce corn almost just for cows. So it's difficult to have the ingredients for local ingredients. They need to go far away, more than 50 kilometers. And then it's very difficult to have, I don't know how does it work in other countries, but here, to find in a legal way an enterprise to work with us, if we have a very detailed contract and we say, we want this and that, nobody will apply. And that will be empty and no enterprise. So it's very difficult to find and to satisfy our demands. So we need to go with the baby steps. First of all, it's not related with us in our division. It's in the municipality, but it's the education department. So we have some difficulties because this is a, I don't know what it is, but the English word for that is a kind of coalition. So it's two different parties together in the municipality, and we are in one, one of the parties, or my boss, the political boss is, and the education is another one. So it's quite difficult to deal with that because sometimes they don't work together. And anyway, so it's difficult to convince them to do exactly what people they are doing.
This is something that still need to be reinforced. Actually, we have the tendency to work a bit in silo. We don't necessarily see the link with what other people may do, or this is something I think it's a challenge and still need to be a lot of work on to, historically speaking, the way we are organized, the way we do things. But so one of my job actually in the city here is to make sure to create link with people inside internally, but also to create the maximum link with stakeholders of the territory to work all together and to explain how everything is linked, how systemic the approach has to be when you talk about climate change mitigation or adaptation. Because when you talk about agriculture, for example, you also talk about water, you talk about biodiversity, you talk about food, you talk about... So it has so many different aspects to it that you must think systemic, but it's not something we are used to, or yes, and so this is something that we need to work on, but it's coming to slowly but surely, and we have good contact also with different stakeholders on the territory, so it makes things easier, sometimes not, but we know that we need to go forward to meet these people and involve as many people internally and externally as possible to make sure that corporations work, to make sure that to create them, to encourage them. And without cooperation and exchange, no systemic approach. And then I think you may face sometimes, you may have not fights, but you may not understand each other and the needs of each other. So I think this is a major issue when you talk either adaptation or mitigation issue towards climate change, is to work together as much as possible.
What we really need to start is to motivate all the team. Because imagine in this case in Braga, we have different departments in the municipality, and some of them are repairing like some buildings which belong to the municipality, and they don't ask us to check out the project. And when it's already done, when it's already on the street, so done physically, then we notice they use asphalt, black asphalt, around the building, instead of having the kind of material which allows water to go in and to go to the soil. And so black asphalt is increasing the temperature in the city, and it doesn't allow the water to go in the soil. So it's the worst solution. But because they didn't ask us, they do that because they are not aware of the need of changing that habits. So first of all, we need to work together to make aware all the municipality as all together, or at least work with that kind of groups, the group of dealing with the new projects. And after that, we need to work with the citizen. So to show what we are doing and what they can do. So like sometimes like last year, we asked the people, what are you doing for the environment? And we received some answers. Like I'm going to my office walking instead of taking my car, as I used to do. And I'm going abroad on holidays by train instead of taking the plane. I'm changing my food, so I don't eat so much red meat anymore, things like that. So little habits which all together make a big change. So we are doing little things, and we are trying to show them to people, and to show them how easy it can be, and they can do the same or similar things. So, like, we have vegetable gardens for people to, it's not to rent because they just pay the water for a year. We are having a like kind of contest in schools with vegetable gardens. So they have, in the end, they have a prize. They receive something like the books or games for the kids. We have, platform for innovation of the solar capacity or possibility of production of energy. So everybody, every citizen or entity can join that platform and check where the house or the building is and how much energy they can produce, if it is enough or is too much, so it's not no interest of having all the roof covered of panels. So they can do little things like that. And we are avoiding to use the water to water the plants in the municipality. So we are changing the kind of plants we use in our gardens and in our parks. And we are inviting volunteers from schools and enterprises and even the citizens to join us to plant that kind of trees and bushes. And we are trying using the, you know, the canteens of the schools, which is the municipality which pays for the food, trying to find food around, like 50 kilometers around, instead of going far away. And so little things. And we have a market with the organic food market in our one place, which was a classical market, but it didn't work really. And then become a cultural market, but on Saturday morning is a bio or organic market, and the producers, they are local and they don't pay anything to the municipality to use the place. So it's an easier way to join citizens and producers. So there are two different little things which we are doing, and we are trying to. We have several weeks during the year, like we have the climate week in September. We have in November the week of, like, European week of waste. We have the mobility week. So we have different weeks to show people how to do and how to deal with different subjects.
I think I will more talk about how we try to sensibilize the city to climate change in general rather than to specifically adaptation, if it's okay. But
of course.
Once again, there's different way of doing this, and what we mainly do is organize events. For example, we have a big festival now, the Transition Festival, that we organize every 2 years, dedicated to this. We also propose different services to citizens. For example, they can rent out electrical bicycle for a very interesting price. We encourage practicing of cycling and other type of mobilité douce, we said in France. We also have what we call the défi challenges for reducing waste, challenges to reducing energy consumption, biodiversity challenges as well. So we regularly launch these challenges, and family can register and be followed and supported when they're doing this. We are a city also where actually there's a lot of gardens as well. And as I talked about the forest earlier, which is a big green lung next to the city. So we also have colleagues who do lots of action around gardening and biodiversity, dedicated to this. So, and we also have a special program that we call Trajectoire, where it's dedicated to schools. They can choose in this catalog where kind of action they want to tackle in schools with the kids. And there's a lot of action dedicated to climate issue in general. So these are the way we involve citizens, I would say, in issue related to climate change.
It's great to see how many ideas are still flying through the air between you two. But the hour is nearly upon us. So it's time to go our separate ways again. Miriam and Christina, thank you both so much for joining me on the Covenant of Mayors podcast today.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you very much, Christina. Take care also, and hopefully we speak soon as well for another occasion.
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me in another episode of the Covenant of Mayors podcast. Next time, we'll be talking to Debrek about how they use technical assistance from the Covenant of Mayors to overcome some of their climate challenges. Remember, you can find the transcript for this episode and other episodes at the Covenant of Mayors website, eu-mayors.ec.europa.eu. Talk to you next time.